Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Friday, the 26th of January. Should elementary schools be extended for another 3 years? The country is starting to look at middle schools, and there are a number of cities that really have changed the whole educational system, converting elementary schools, and this is happening, I know, in Milwaukee and in many other cities as well, into K through 8 schools. There are some districts that have gone 6th grade through 12th grade. And all of this to try and address what's going on with middle school students. Grades start going down in middle school. Crime rates are going up in middle schools. High school dropout rates in 9th grade particularly. We're looking at boys and girls who just are not performing very well. There's been a major study of these new K through 8 schools from Johns Hopkins University, and they found that students at Philadelphia's K through 8 schools outperformed students at traditional middle schools, but also those schools had fewer poor and minority students and much more experienced teachers. One of the researchers said the bump in student achievement that administrators may achieve in converting to K through 8 may not make as big a difference as they would hope for. If you teach middle school, if you're a parent or a friend or a relative of somebody who's been in middle school, you know that these are not very easy years, and we'll talk about how we can help our young people in those years with a guest who's worked with young people in those years for a long time. Dr. Maureen Furr is our guest. She has been a middle school principal for 27 years, and her schools have been honored for academic excellence and for following the tenets of This We Believe, Successful Schools for Adolescents. She's been principal of 3 middle schools. 2 of those schools were awarded the National High Performing Schools Award, Schools to Watch. In 2004, she was honored as the 2004 National Middle School Association Distinguished Educator. In 2006, she received the North Carolina Middle School Association Distinguished Service Award. She has her Ph.D. From the Teachers College of Columbia University, and just recently she switched to the high school level. So since October of this past year, she has been the principal of South Mecklenburg High School in Charlotte, North Carolina. We're going to get a ton of phone calls, I just sense, on this topic, because I think this is a neglected period of education and because so much is going on with young people. And if we remember our lives, what was going on with us in those years as well. 800-486-8655-227-2050 if you're joining us in Milwaukee. Dr. Maureen Furr, hello. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hello, Kathleen. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm just really glad to devote attention to this particular time of life. What is it that was happening nationally, Maureen? Was it crime rates going up or performance going down that caused so many districts in this country to totally change the way we educate middle school students?
Well, in fact, change has been ongoing in the middle level for probably the past 50 or 60 years.
Oh, my.
The change has taken place in a variety of ways over that time. First of all, to create junior high schools, which weren't a particularly good idea, then to move to what's called the middle school movement in the 60s and 70s. I think the middle school movement really captures the essence of what good middle schools should do. What's happening more recently, I think, is really a manifestation of a number of factors, one of them being, yes, middle school's a tough time and there are lots of challenges. Schools in general are facing lots of challenges, and middle schools may be a microcosm of that whole change process. But as far as grade-level configuration, as it defines middle school, I'm a little skeptical. I'm not sure that it's that important a factor.
Mm-hmm. There's also something to be said, and I know this just anecdotally, that young people, once they're out of elementary school, feel just a little bit more grown up, and the idea of going to a place where you change teachers, where you have a different teacher for a different subject matter, is kind of cool, for lack of a better word, for a lot of young people.
It really is. I think it feeds that part of them that is really looking to move into that next stage of life.
Right.
And if it's well scheduled, well controlled, well monitored, it can be a very positive thing.
Mm-hmm. The other part of this is that you put a lot of kids together who are trying to figure out who they are, what their identity is. The hormones are raging in the body. The concentration is not what it used to be because you got sex on your mind. And this can be problematic when it comes to cracking the books.
Absolutely, that's the case. Over the course of my career, I've been in a variety of different settings. As a matter of fact, my first jobs at the middle level were in a K-8 kind of situation.
Oh.
And so I've experienced what that's like, and what you're saying is true. When 6th, 7th, and 8th graders are in a middle school setting, particularly in a community where there's a lot of stability, where people have gone to the elementary schools and then continue on into those later grades, there's a sense of home, a sense of belongingness, and there are opportunities for the older kids to assume some leadership. Those are real advantages.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure that they may not be outweighed or at least considered against a backdrop of the kinds of benefits that can be had in a place where children with similar needs are put together, because you have the opportunity to meet those needs.
Mm-hmm. Well, how do you explain these well-documented slumps in learning that take place among middle school students, the dropout rates, ninth grade being a crucial year because kids haven't been able to get all they need from middle school, and they drop out of school in ninth grade? What's going on?
Well, ninth grade is a particularly challenging year. No matter where you put ninth grade, if they're in the high school, if they're in a continuous middle school, a comprehensive high school, ninth grade is just a tough year for kids. I think that part of it has to do with the developmental conditions of kids at that point in time. They're coming to terms with emerging adulthood, not just adolescence. In some cases, they're taking on adult responsibilities at a very early age. And all of those things contribute. One of the things that I think is kind of a double-edged sword is that as we increase standards and expectations that children must meet to be able to go forward into high school and be successful, there need to be support systems for youngsters at that point so that they don't fall through the cracks. And I'm afraid in some of our schools, we don't do a good enough job of supporting, particularly those ninth graders. So I'm not sure that the dropout rate is attributable so much to what didn't happen in middle school as what maybe needs to happen in the transition from those middle years into the high school years.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Somebody in some article I read about this said, and this makes sense to me, I wonder if we need to go beyond this, what these young people need in middle school and early high school is smaller classes. I'm all for that. Engaging curriculum, personalized attention, and well-prepared teachers. Makes
those
sense.
That's music to my ears. That is exactly what we need, and unfortunately, yeah, it's more and more challenging to provide that with economic supports being less and less available to public schools. Things like class size are difficult to achieve at the level that we would like.
Right.
But in middle schools and actually in high schools, if you look at the high school reform efforts that are being put forth by NASSP, the National Association for Secondary School Principals, and a lot of the studies around that work, what they're looking at is creating small learning communities among larger groups of kids when you don't have the luxury to provide that small learning environment in the classroom per se.
Mm-hmm.
You can take a large school and break it down so that it has the feel of a smaller school. And that's actually something that middle schools have been doing for many years. High schools are now getting on board and realizing that was a really good idea.
Right. I don't know if you chose this age group, but I find it interesting, Dr. Furr, that you spent 27 years as a middle school principal. Some people would say there's a woman who's a saint. Other people would. I suspect that you enjoy those years or you wouldn't have done this for so long.
Middle school really has always been my passion. I've worked with middle schoolers since the mid-70s in a variety of different settings and in a variety of different kinds of jobs. They really are my heart. I'm not sure that, you know, personally it may go back to the fact that when I was in seventh grade, my mother became my middle school principal.
Oh, my gosh. Isn't
and
that something?
Maybe I'm trying to undo all of that. But practically speaking, I think it's a really neat time in a child's life, where you have the best that childhood has to offer with the openness and the curiosity and the enthusiasm, and yet you also have some of the developing intellectual and emotional means by which kids can do something with that enthusiasm. If you catch them and you do the right things with them at that point in time, I think you really can set the stage for success not only in high school and college, but all the way through life.
And what if you don't catch them?
I worry about that a lot, because obviously we have problems throughout the country where we're not doing the job that we need to do in catching children. One of the things that I'm concerned about is increasingly I see a need for a broader partnership than just what schools can do. It has been historically the case that when things go wrong in society, we turn to the schools and say, okay, folks, fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's part of what's going on right now. We have rising crime rates in the nation. We have problems with economic issues that affect people of all ages. These factors also influence the children who go to school, who come out of the environment that we're concerned about in a more general way. Schools can only do just so much. The education process has to do with much more than the academics. And I think middle school has done a real good job when it's done well to accept that larger responsibility. But I think there need to be more and more empowered partnerships so that we can provide for all of the other ancillary things that are influencing children's ability to succeed in school that really are outside the purview of a school system or at least a school building. Things like health issues, things like nutrition,
mm-hmm.
the education and ability to be engaged on the part of parents who may have to have two or three jobs in order to make ends meet
right,
and aren't
right.
available.
Yeah.
All of those are factors that schools are grappling with, but I think increasingly, I'm afraid, in isolation, as communities look to schools to solve the problems pretty much on their own.
Mm-hmm. Let's spend just a moment before we go to our phone calls. Our lines are all filled here. On something that's also part of the national dialogue, and there are a lot of schools, the MPS system is going to have some of these available fairly soon, these single-sex schools in middle school or in high school, limiting the sexual kind of distraction, maybe promoting self-esteem. Do these need some further attention? Are you keen on them?
You know, I think I've always been somebody who likes to have a big bag of tricks. And when you have a big challenge, the bigger bag of tricks is definitely in order. I think that the configuration of schools that are available to children are strengthened by their variety. For some children, I think there's great promise in those kinds of configurations. I'm not sure they're the right thing for all children, but one size fits all is rarely the solution in any challenge.
We're going to welcome phone calls. Dr. Maureen Furr is our guest. We're talking about middle schools this hour, and she knows middle schools. She was a middle school principal for 27 years. Her mother was a middle school principal, and this year she became the principal of South Mecklenburg High School in Charlotte, North Carolina. She's won all kinds of awards for her schools, and she was honored as the National Middle School Association Distinguished Educator a couple of years ago. She is with us this hour to talk about, you know, what about K through 8? What about 6 through 12? What about single sex? How do we educate? And I think some of it makes, you know, some of it's kind of basic here that we need, adolescents need our attention. They need attention in class, smaller classes, a curriculum that grabs them, and teachers who are engaged, of course. And that may help them be engaged. To you in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to your phone calls now for Dr. Maureen Furr and to Brian from Hartford, our first caller on this subject. Hi, Brian.
Good morning, ladies. Thank you for taking my phone call.
Sure.
Good morning.
Well, I'm sorry to say that. I was one of those students that fell through the cracks in the Milwaukee public system when I switched from elementary school to middle school. And I went to all inner city schools for my education, and I found that switching from elementary school to middle school, I was really excited at first because you got that feeling of I'm going to be a big kid now. I'm moving on, you know. I'm going to roll with the big dogs, so to speak. But once I actually got into that middle school environment, I was no longer in a comfortable surrounding. I was now the little fish in a big pond again. I didn't know any of the other students. All my best friends had gone to other schools.
Yeah.
So the psychological effect of switching from that structured environment of elementary school where for the last 6 years I had, you know, grown up and I knew all the teachers. I even knew the principal by first name even to this day. And going to that middle school environment where just trying to find out who you are while your body's going through all those changes really was hard. And I went from being a straight-A student in elementary school with high regards from my teachers, a lot of respect, to flunking out of eighth grade and actually turning into a bit of a delinquent. And if it wasn't for the saving grace of a charter school for high school, I probably would have been a dropout and probably someplace worse than I am today.
You know, and your story is not only an unfortunate one for you, but it's all too common.
Hmm.
Good middle schools don't let happen what happened to you.
No.
I think there are some really wonderful resources for those schools that are motivated to provide for just the kinds of needs that apparently were not provided for you. One of the things that I've been really involved with and very excited about is something called the National Forum for Middle Grades Reform. It's an organization that has put together basically a set of criteria to use as guidelines when middle schools are concerned about doing the right thing by children. It's really comprehensive, and if it is used by a school, it's very difficult for kids to slip through the cracks as they did with you. It puts attention, yes, on academic excellence, that's important, but it gives a lot of attention to developmental responsiveness, which has to do with having people in a school who know what you're going through, who understand the age level, who put supports in place by way of activities and ways to help make sure the children get to know one another. Going into a new environment, you have to make it possible for kids to make new friends. There's one of the factors that is very common in good middle schools is something called an advisory program that really structures the transition so that when children are having difficulty, somebody notices it right away and is able to do something about it. The quality middle schools I'm talking about would do what it sounds like that charter school did for you, and mm-hmm. that is give you a personalized environment where you didn't feel like you were getting lost, mm-hmm. where you didn't feel as if you weren't being served.
Mm-hmm. Brian, your voice sounds strong. Have you been able to fashion a good life for yourself?
Oh, definitely. After that charter school, which was Nova in Milwaukee's north side, I can't sing enough praises about the principals and teachers there. It was small classroom size.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, I had the choice of either going straight to college or in joining the military. And I didn't have money at the time going to go to college, so I ended up joining the military. And based on the experiences I had going to schools from elementary to the middle to high school, it really helped in my career in the military to become a better human being and to become who I am today. And I'm very happy with who I am today. But I just like to say that I'm really glad this conversation is happening, and I really hope that MPS especially will look at doing K through 8 and also the single-sex mm-hmm. schooling, because I believe that will help produce a much better generation than what we currently have.
Yeah, well, they certainly have gone that direction. But it's interesting that he mentioned, this smaller class size, this smaller environment that helped him, Dr. Furr.
I agree completely, and it's an imperative that I think as taxpayers we need to pay attention to when it comes time to vote funds for public schools.
Yes.
When classes get into the 30, 35,
right, exactly,
40 range,
exactly.
That anonymity is almost inevitable for
yes.
kids who don't stand out in the crowd and basically call attention to themselves either positively or negatively.
Right. To say nothing of the burden it puts on teachers to have to educate that many students in a classroom, it's insane, I think.
It really is a recipe for great difficulty, if not failure.
Yeah. But then that all calls to mind. Parents, most people would agree, yes, we want that kind of attention. Then to change the structure of our schools or to give the schools the kind of resources they need to be able to educate that way is another story, Dr. Furr.
It really is. You know, I think one of the things that's attractive about K-8 is the sense that there is that personal attention.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
it stands to reason that given the size of the school, if 6 through 8 is only a portion of a larger student population, that portion will be larger representative of the total group.
Mm-hmm.
One of the disadvantages of that kind of setting, however, is that it's less likely that you will have folks who are really attuned to the needs of early adolescents, mm-hmm. who are trained and prepared to deal with children at that age.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that is difficult in any community is to provide a real comprehensive complement of programs, which are part of what helped to get kids engaged in middle school. Things like chorus and drama and dance and sports and hobbies and chess and all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a limited population and the resources that you have to be stretched across a continuum of kindergarten through eighth grade, it's difficult to give those middle schoolers their due, where when they're in a setting where they are more the predominant population typical middle school, you can provide more for them.
Mm-hmm.
But never losing sight of the fact that that personalization is critical. With advisory, what happens is everybody on a staff has a group of students, and typically they'll meet for a period of time every day. Their job, basically, is to get to know one another, and for the adult, to get to know the students well enough so that nobody feels anonymous. When you spread it across everybody in school, the group size gets down into 15 or 20 instead of 30 or 35. Children feel a safe haven both with one another and with a staff member that they know can serve as an advocate for them.
Right.
Those things are possible in any configuration, be it K-8, be it 6-12, be it an individual middle school with a 6-8 or a 5-8 or whatever grade level configuration. I think the critical piece is not so much the grades as what gets done with the children once they get inside the door.
Yeah. Brian, I'm so glad you called and we're listening. Thank you so much. Carrie is next from Superior. Hi, Carrie.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to call. I'm so glad somebody's talking about this because our middle school was built 4 years ago. I have one in sixth grade and one in eighth grade. They came from a country school, and it was K through five. They kind of hovered over them and, you know, take care of them. And I was afraid my kids were going to get to this huge school where all the elementary schools went together and they would fall through the cracks. And my son had, you know, a little problem with reading and stuff. And I thought, oh, no, you know, what's going to happen? And I don't know if they do the small, they do some small classes there, but my kids have excelled at, you know, this middle school. My son has gotten straight A's. My daughter, and the opportunities there that they have there, then not so much at the elementary school, but they have done. I even took his report card back to his elementary school teachers and said, "Look at it, he's got straight A's."
Oh my gosh! Yeah, Dr. Furr.
You know, that just warms my heart.
I'll bet it does.
That's what a good school can do. And again, without regard for grade configuration, you're speaking to exactly the kinds of things that when we're paying attention to who our students are, we can do so well. We hover in middle school just like in elementary school, but in a little bit different way that's more appropriate for the age level of the children. But it sounds as if your kids had great opportunities not only to be looked after, but also to kind of spread their wings and try some things that they weren't able to do in the elementary school. And to me, that's very appropriate, and I'm glad that it worked out so well.
Thanks so much for the call, Carrie. Let's go to Tom from Green Bay next. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I was listening to your show a couple of nights ago around 10:30. It was rebroadcasted with Jim Johnson in North Carolina. And she mentioned about partnering with the schools. And Jim Johnson was partnering with the Durham Scholar Program. I was wondering if she's familiar with that and if they've used that in their school system at all.
Well, I'll tell you that I'm aware that there are a number of partnerships, and frankly, right here in Charlotte, we have some very strong partnerships among some schools with some corporate entities. The district as a whole makes a really concerted effort to reach out and try to draw in community resources and also to extend the schools so that we have an integral role in the community as a whole. It's difficult sometimes to have enough partners to go around as the numbers of schools. In North Carolina, our school population is growing by leaps and bounds. I know when I was in the Northeast, where I spent my early years in education, we spent a lot of time getting ready to manage decline as student populations got smaller. In Charlotte, just in our school system, we add about 5,000 students to the school system every single year. It is exponential. exponential growth. And when that happens, it's hard to get the corporate and other resources spread thinly enough to be able to address the needs of that many schools.
I imagine. Thanks, Tom, very much for your call. Let's go to Bill from Tomahawk next. Oh, I should tell you, our lines have been crowded. There are a couple openings right now. 800-486-8655, Milwaukee Callers, 227-2050. Hi, Bill.
Oh, hi, Kathleen, and hi, Maureen.
Hello.
You're not going to like my comment, but I'm going to give it to you anyway.
That's okay.
I went to middle school in New York in the late 50s. I'm 60 years old, and I'm from the pull-down map generation.
I know it well.
Yeah. Well, do you know what was going on in New York in the 50s? They had the region system.
Sure. Were you in upstate or in the city?
I was outside of the cities.
Okay.
In the hinterlands.
Uh-huh.
At any rate, as I remember it, and I won't swear this is a perfect memory, but it's pretty good. At the end of the school year, and I think actually at the semester, we were tested for knowledge. And if the grade that we got on the standard test didn't match the grade the teacher gave us, we had to take the standardized grade test.
Mm-hmm.
And the teachers weren't tenured for 5 or 6 years. And if they had too many kids flunk, they got rid of the teachers.
How unfortunate.
Hmm.
It was a pretty straight-up school system. I was smoking cigarettes, and I wasn't a perfect student. When I came to Wisconsin, I came to Appleton, which had a darn good school system at the time and maybe still does. I was about a grade ahead of my peers. And you know, it's literacy and letters and numbers. And I think when the school system takes a position that in 8 years, 200 and some odd days a year, that they can't impart literacy and letters and numbers, you set yourself up for failure.
Dr. Furr.
I could not agree more. Academic rigor is one of the critical components of any school. And frankly, it needs to be there whether or not the other things are being addressed. I would say, though, that the ability to do that and have kids be able to receive that knowledge effectively is enhanced if we're also organizing around the other needs of children so that they are more receptive, so that we're doing a better job in providing for them as people as well as learners. But I couldn't agree more. That academic learning, that knowledge base, is essential for every child.
Yeah. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Ellen from La Crosse. Hi, Ellen.
Hi, I am calling about my kids that are currently in 6th and 5th grade, and their products right now of a Catholic school education that we've been extremely pleased with. We are contemplating relocation, and I'm wondering if your guest has any thoughts about how traumatic this is, if there's any good literature that says this is a horrible time to do this or a good time to do this, or will this be the worst thing ever in their life, or will they survive?
Well, kids are resilient. They tend to survive more often than not, but I understand and I'm sensitive to the fact that this is a difficult thing. Their ages are, from my experience, a little easier to deal with than if you were to wait a few years. With 5th and 6th grade, they're still in a malleable state, so to speak. They're going to be going through social transitions. There are going to be new friends. There are going to be changes in their life anyway. So whether the changes happen in the environment in which they're located now or if you go to a new place, without any knowledge of your kids at all, I would say that the timing is better now than it would be when they get older. When kids get into the teen years and they get invested in friendships, then it becomes very, very difficult when they have to relocate, particularly if they're heavily involved in their school and social life outside of school. Good resources. I can point you in the direction of some good resources. If you log on to the National Middle Schools Association website online, they have a bookstore. And in that bookstore, there are a wide variety of books designed for parents of middle schoolers that will literally take you by the hand and walk you through exactly what's happening in it and assure you that whatever it is, it's just like everybody else. One of the horrible things about being a parent of a middle schooler is you think you're all alone and that your kids are different. And more often than not, they're just going through a very predictable stage, and it helps you get through.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great to know about. The middle school, National Middle Schools, you can just...
National Middle School Association?
That's correct.
All right.
Great.
Good
Thank
luck.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Thanks for the call. Let's go next to Bob from Ellison Bay. Hi, Bob.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I am a retired middle school principal from Illinois, and we certainly worked very closely with the National Middle School Association and Illinois Association of Middle Schools and did a lot of the things that are being touted as positive things for middle schools. But one of the things that concerned me over my last several years was it seems as if the emphasis on the middle school characteristics, many times the academic rigor does seem to take a little bit of a back seat. The academics get a little foggy, and I'm glad to see today that we are starting to, I believe, build a little more structure back into our academic programs with some of the state standards. But the other thing that I really think could improve a lot of schools in this country at all levels, I think parents have got are confused about the importance of academic rigor also. They want it, but they don't want sometimes the challenge that comes along with it.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to be there to support the kids when they don't understand things, but we had a lot of difficulty with parents questioning when things might be a little too tough for their kids, and I just like your comments about that.
Really, that's interesting.
Well, and I agree, and I've had a similar experience in over the course of my career. Frankly, I was concerned about middle schools, particularly in the late 80s and early 90s. Because it was getting very touchy-feely. We were really focused on everybody feeling good, and academics did take a back seat. It's one of the things that I'm so excited about with this Schools to Watch program that's come out of the National Forum is that it's a really balanced approach. When schools go through a Schools to Watch study, number one on the hit parade is academic excellence. One of the things that encourages me about it is, unlike my experiences earlier in my career and my own experiences as a student, it's not just academic excellence for the students who can cut it, but it's excellence for all. And that has to be different depending on the needs of the children, but it doesn't allow for any excuses to be made. If children have difficulties, it's up to the school to meet those difficulties and find ways around them. But it also, as a process, looks to engage parents both to help them to know how to help their children and also to give them a venue in which they can come together, support one another, learn about how to support their children, and see that they really are an important part of their children's lives. In middle school, sometimes kids will push their parents away.
Oh, yes.
And they don't really mean it. If you ask them truthfully, they really want their parents around. They just don't want anybody to know it.
Exactly. So how does schools, I think that parents don't know what to do with middle school and also with high school. And when you get to high school level, there just aren't very many ways for parents, many of whom are professional people and want to help and, you know, have a lot to offer, don't know how to help because they're not very welcome. And I think that's true of middle schools. And what you said is very true, that the kids, you know, they're a little embarrassed to have their parents around. So how do you tap into this parental resource?
Well, one of the things that I did, particularly in my last middle school, had a very supportive group of parents who were willing to trust that we at the school knew something. And we came together. I used some of the books that I referenced with the previous caller, and we talked about things. We would have parent meetings. Last year or the year before, we did something on the Internet. We did a series because we realized that with the advent of the Internet being so accessible and things like MySpace being available to children of any age, even though they shouldn't be given access that young, that there are some issues around that parents were struggling with, and the Internet is not familiar to the parents of middle schoolers. It came after they were of that age, and they really don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
We had conversations. We brought in speakers. We had means by which for parents to communicate. I'm a big advocate of using email, and I found that it, particularly in middle school, parents would call and would email and say, hey, you know, this is what's happening. What do you think?
Mm-hmm.
And that trust that they allowed me to be given allowed me in turn to assist them. There also was a trust among parents and teachers that can be cultivated that allows there to be a more decentralized support network for parents Because there's only one me, there's only one principal, there's only one teacher who really takes any interest of children. That individual can't serve everybody. Instead, when the whole faculty is on board, seeking out parental involvement, helping parents feel comfortable with school, reaching out to them, and frankly having some tough conversations, because what the caller said is absolutely right. You know, we want academic rigor until Johnny gets a B.
Right.
And then we want to know what's wrong with the teacher.
Right, right.
I think with understanding and some tough conversations, that can be overcome in some cases. It's difficult. It's a very difficult balance to maintain, but it's an important thing to strive for.
Mm-hmm. More phone calls in a moment. Dr. Maureen Furr is our guest. We're talking about middle schools and engaging in this dialogue that's going on about the best way to educate middle school students. Is it K through 8? A lot of districts have gone to that model. Is it 6 through 12? Do we want to separate the sexes at this time? How do we get at this drop in performance that takes place among early adolescents and then may result in high school dropout rates being too high? Dr. Furr is the best possible guest. She's been a middle school principal for 27 years. She has been the principal of schools awarded the National High Performing Schools Award. She's been honored just a couple years ago as the National Middle School Association Distinguished Educator. And last year, she received the North Carolina Middle School Association Distinguished Service Award. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Our number is 800-486-8655, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go back to phone calls now. Mitch from Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi, good morning.
Hello.
Good morning.
Hi, I heard just some of the credentials you spoke of, Dr. Furr, and I'm an educator in Milwaukee Public Schools, and I have a question and I have some comments. I just wanted to mention with regard to one K-8 school that I worked at, I remember the principal saying, we'd love to give our middle school students a middle school experience at that K-8 school. I found that it was an interesting comment. In other words, talking about specials and other support that a middle school would typically have. My concerns are, as an educator, that there are pros and cons to the K-8 model. I am mostly in the con area. As you say, they may get more attention, but I am concerned that, especially with MPS, they waved the magic wand about 4, 5, 8 years ago, whenever it was we start with K-8 schools, giving middle school kids a middle school experience at a K-8 school was kind of more of a dream. And my question is to the doctor, how many years of your 27 years, I believe it was, were you a K-8 principal? And I'll take your comments off the air.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Hello?
Yes, yes, go ahead, Dr. Furr.
I've never served as a K-8 principal. I taught in the K-8 configuration. What the caller said has great merit. I don't know that it's possible to provide a full complement of the middle school experience in a situation where you're also addressing the needs of emerging learners, of preschool or early school students, emerging readers, all of those. It's a great deal to ask of an institution when specializing in middle-level children gives you a little bit more in the way of resources and time to focus. But I still believe that the essence of what's important and special about middle schools, and that is focusing on the students, their needs, and providing for those needs and helping them go through this transitional period, can be accomplished in any situation. My own bias, I like a separate middle school. That's been my experience. But I know we did a lot of those things when I was a K-8 teacher, and we supported our children well in that situation too. I'm a little skeptical when I hear any time a broad stroke effort to go to one configuration or one model versus another makes me kind of wonder if there are not other factors at play. I don't know the Wisconsin education system right now in terms of its growth or decline in numbers, but going to a K-8 configuration, I think in some instances, is partially motivated by a means to consolidate resources and serve more people in a broad stroke kind of way for economic reasons.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a bad reason to do it, but I think it's dangerous when we ascribe one purpose when in fact it's really another. I think the job can be done in any setting, but I'm not sure that any configuration is a panacea.
Thanks, Mitch, so much for your call. Let's go to Marianne from Wausau next. Hi, Marianne.
Hi. Yes, I have a daughter who's currently in fifth grade, and so we're looking at the middle schools for sixth grade. And I guess what I'm wondering, she's a very good student, and currently she's been parochial elementary school and done very well. And based on what I've been able to gather, it looks like the public school system may provide a little more challenge, but there's the concern about, you know, uprooting her at this point to a new system. Some of her friends are going over, some are not. And also, I've been going to visit these schools, but what are the questions to ask, or how can you tell if the school is really focusing on the student?
I would say the first thing that I would do is when you go, listen to what people offer up before you ask the questions. When you're in a school, are they talking about accolades and awards? Are they talking about test scores? Absent any concern for individual children and looking at that developmental piece, are they talking about the touchy-feely, we love our children, everybody's happy, without any attention to the academic rigor? Let me give you a reference to a site, and that's the Schools to Watch site. What that organization or what that that body of people are looking at is a balance between academics, responsiveness to the age of the students and the needs of those students, an organization that supports that. And one more thing that's a pet issue in my mind, and that's social equity. In middle schools, sometimes if we fall into the trap of junior highs and old-style high schools, we let the school system stratify students in a way that is counterproductive. A good middle school is not only going to have high expectations and support systems for kids to reach those expectations, it's going to look out for the individual children and the groups of children and the social development, but it's also going to be sure that there's a place for everyone and that everyone has access to all of the opportunities that are available. It's dangerous sometimes, and some schools will do this, to provide wonderful things for some children and for other children not so much. I'm skeptical when that comes out in conversation. The questions that I would ask have to do with those areas. How do you help children through the transition from elementary to middle school? What do you do for children who are new to the public school system? How do you know that you have academic rigor? What are the standards? How do you help your teachers to be able to do this difficult job? What kind of support is there for teachers? Those are all important questions that I think will start a good dialogue.
Thank you so much for your call. Good luck in the search. Let's go to Ann from Eau Claire. Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm just interested in what you think would be the appropriate amount of homework per night for a sixth grader in middle school.
I'll tell you what my formula was, and then I'll tell you the limitation of it. What I would say to my teachers was, in every core subject, which would basically be the big four, math, science, social studies, and language arts, no more than 15 minutes a night per subject. But here's the limit. There are some children who can go through a quantity of homework that would take the average child 15 minutes and have it done in 5 minutes flat. There are also children who are going to be labor and sometimes overwork assignments and put in 3 or 4 hours on that very same work. What I look for is a balance in life. If homework becomes so burdensome that children can't get out and play, can't interact with the family, can't be involved in social opportunities, scouts, or whatever happens to interest them, I think that that's overkill. Homework shouldn't be the be-all, end-all. On the other hand, it shouldn't be unimportant. I think it provides an opportunity for teachers to reinforce, to practice skills and knowledge that have been provided in class. It shouldn't be busy work. It should be meaningful, and it should be directly related to what's being learned in class, but it also shouldn't be so excessive that it's really a problem for children to accomplish.
Is that what's going on in your house, Ann, or not?
Well, you know what? I'll tell you what. When our son was in sixth grade, and he's now a senior in high school, sixth grade was the worst year of his life, and it was because of school. And this was a team concept. It was the English teacher the math teacher, the social studies teacher, and the science teacher, and they were in a team concept, okay? And the kids were doing, and it wasn't just our son, he's an A student, they were doing 3 to 3.5 hours of homework a night.
Oh my gosh, that's awful.
Every night, and that wasn't with his, that was not including his musical instrument.
That's overkill.
We talked to them at conferences. We talked to the teachers. They completely ignored us. I talked to the principal. I'd be really surprised if he doesn't still recognize my voice on the telephone. We talked the whole year, and nothing changed. Nothing changed. And what we found out was that this team, you know, everyone knew about this team, but we didn't know about this team. Everyone said, well, just don't get on team whatever the name of it was.
Right.
Well, we didn't know about that. And it was horrible for him. And I insisted then the following year our daughter was going to be in sixth grade and was. And I spoke with the principals all summer, and I said, this isn't going to happen to me again. This is going to happen to her. And they really weren't too receptive.
That speaks of an unwillingness to interact with parents, and just the way that we say we should be encouraging. We have to listen to what our parents have to say.
Right. And our students, 3.5 hours of homework? Oh my gosh.
That's
terrible.
Unreasonable. Absolutely.
No, not
unreasonable.
At all reasonable. Yeah. Thanks, Ann, for the call. Mary is next from Waukesha. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was a middle school teacher for 31 years. Exciting to hear someone talking about middle school who really wanted to be there. And I was really sad to hear the last caller's experience with a house team, because in my time in middle school, that was the most successful system I saw. When I started out, obviously in the 70s, it was more of a mini high school type situation. But a good team, when you're given common planning time with the other teachers in your team, you have, you know, we had 120 students in common. We knew them. We could, you know, work with their parents. It was a better transition. But we could also plan out so we weren't all giving a test at the same time or a project at the same time.
Exactly.
Or something like that. But in addition, and I'm loving listening to your guest, is getting people, teachers and principals both, that want to be at the middle school level. It's not a, I got put there because of an assignment, or it's a stepping stone to high school, or something else. Just the desire to want to work with that population. And it is a very exciting population to work with. Very.
I so appreciate your comments. And if you weren't so far away, I'd try to recruit you into our system, because we need more teachers at the middle level who really want to be there.
Thanks so much for the call.
You.
Bye. Let's go next to Lori from Eau Claire. Hi, Lori.
Hi.
Hello.
My daughter is in fifth grade right now. She's gone through Catholic school. We have sixth grade next year. We have a Catholic middle school and the public school middle school. And I've gone to both of them and talked to people. She has ADHD and nonverbal learning disorder. And I'm just trying to find some advice. You mentioned the bookstore, so I'll have to go check on that, to just try and decide which, you know, whether the smaller, more, you know, closed up type place versus the large, you know, big school. And after hearing the former person from Eau Claire, I don't want 3 hours of homework a night for her either.
Well, and that's not something that you should be encountering in any situation. I'm always a believer in trusting your gut instincts. You visited both schools. You've probably gotten a sense of how attuned they are to the needs of individual learners, particularly someone who has some challenges. I don't know that there's any universal that either a private or parochial school does a better job at that, or that a given public school would do a better job of that. It almost is more a factor of the people who are there and where they put their priorities. In any system, I think that you'll find that in a public situation, there are some schools that do a great job in really providing for children with any kind of special need. They really focus on it. They nurture those youngsters. They provide resources. And all things being equal, a public system probably has more resources and more highly trained teachers to work with children with disabilities. On the other hand, if that is not a priority, the public school, the private school may be a better setting. I have a cousin who lives in another state with a special needs child. It's a very, very expensive area that she lives in. The school system is touted as excellent. But her special needs child was not being served.
Hmm.
And she ended up having to get involved with advocates and attorneys and lawsuits to push the system to meet the needs of her child because they were so caught up in being wonderful for nobody in particular and everybody in general that they really didn't focus on her child and her needs.
Mm-hmm.
So I would ask tough questions about how are you going to be able to serve my child, what are the kinds of provisions that you have, and then listen and trust your gut.
Yeah. Doctor, thank you so much for being with us, Dr. Furr. It was really a great hour. I appreciate all your insight and all your dedication to middle school students.
Thank you so much. I so enjoyed it. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah. Dr. Maureen Furr, middle school principal for 27 years, and this year made a change, is now the principal of South Mecklenburg High School in Charlotte, North Carolina. She's won all kinds of awards for her devotion and innovative teaching approaches to middle school students. Thanks to Mimi Notstein for producing this program and to Rhonda Fanning for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll be with you again on Monday.